Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. Today, we have a very special episode. We're approaching Veterans Day, and so we wanted to invite two very important people.
But they couldn't be here.
So you guys are the next.
Stuck with us.
Yeah. It sounded like he had that queued up.
Yeah, he was waiting for it. But we have two guests here, Marcus Mariquin and Jason Domingo, and you guys are both chaplains.
Yes.
So we wanted to have you guys on today and just talk to us about ministry as a chaplain, challenges that you think that service members have, and then just also just how the church can help support our military families. So thanks for being here. Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
We're honored. Yeah. We're honored.
Well, we'll just go ahead and start right off with our first question. So how did you become a chaplain? Mm-hmm. What was the path towards that?
I think before you answer that question, you have something to say.
I do have a little disclaimer. We both are officers in the United States Army. Okay. Army chaplains. Mm-hmm. So if we say soldier or any army-ism, we are also including any airmen or sailors or anybody mm-hmm. else that comes to this church kind of thing in there. But mm-hmm. we might say soldiers more often. But the views expressed are our own and not reflect the official policy or position of the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense or the U.S. government. So, yeah, these are our own opinions.
I feel like you should have had more of like the views expressed are, you know.
Yeah,
like a radio
okay.
voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I did do that one time. I was going on to Eglin, and I called I called him a soldier. Mm-hmm. He just looked at me funny. And Amy's like, why did you call him a soldier? Yeah.
I was like, oh. I mean, I feel like it's
somewhere
better.
Else.
I say air people. You know?
Air people?
Air people. You know, it's more yeah. inclusive. You
not
know,
airmen.
The military, okay. yeah. The
army is woke.
Yeah.
Soldiers.
Are you?
Soldiers.
Soldiers.
We're all soldiers.
Airmen is the we only Air
see,
Force.
We only see green.
Marines.
The Marines, yeah, Marine.
And then sailors.
The sailors, sailor. Or seamen.
Seamen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just depends.
My views so also people. Do not represent the Army.
Yes, people. They definitely do.
They definitely do not.
That's for sure.
I think I already said the Army's woke, so you know.
Yeah.
Do you have any disclaimers, Jason?
No.
okay.
I'm just happy to be on the largest, fastest growing church podcast in all of Northwest Florida.
Absolutely, thank you.
I wonder if that's anywhere near true.
It doesn't
probably
matter.
Not.
I think we're
but
declining,
okay.
actually, in popularity. Our stats are going down.
Are going
not
down.
After this show. That's right. We got to – we
that's
I don't even
exactly
know
why
was.
We had you yeah. guys yeah. on here.
Yeah.
So
sorry, the question again.
Your story, how you became a chaplain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll start.
Yeah, go for it.
So I've been wanting to be chaplain since I was 16 years old. Before I even knew about chaplaincy, I wanted to join the Army. Wanted to go in the military. Wanted to go to college, and I felt like the military was going to be my ticket to that. Became a Christian in high school, and so around 15 years old, was getting really involved in my church, and then was feeling called to ministry as well. So I was in JROTC in high school. I was a wrestler, and I was in JROTC, so I was a nerd and an athlete. So it was a weird, weird like mix there. And
on point.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my instructor
told me. Are JROTC all nerds?
You know, not to stereotype all of them, but in the early 2000s, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where it's at now. Like, where the line meets with nerd and, like, jock and stuff is just, it's a whole new thing now.
Okay.
But then there was a few of us that were also athletes.
Okay.
But, you know, looking back, I should have just, like, gave into my nerdness, you know? Like, I think a lot of us.
And not wrestled?
In the 90s. Well, no. I've
been a wrestling nerd.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did you say 90s?
Yeah, 90s, 2000s.
Yeah, but when did you graduate high school?
2007.
Mm-hmm. He's a youngin', man. He's a youngin'. Okay, so anyway. Yeah.
So I was feeling called to ministry. I felt like I could do both. So I can go to the ministry and go into the military. It was a little naive.
So you were serving two masters?
At the time,
I'm just kidding.
A little naive at the time because I just really didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know what pastoral ministry – I was feeling called to pastoral ministry and did that in line with chaplaincy. But the more I did ROTC in college in Texas, and the more I was around cadets, the more I was around soldiers, the more that call started to develop into what it looked like. And then in 2018 is when I finished all of our credentials. Some people may not know, military chaplains all have to have a Master's of Divinity, which is roughly...
Or equivalent if you're like different from a
Muslim,
Mormon, yeah, or like Catholic background. Yeah.
But okay. Minimum 72. Most programs are like 90, 120 hours, depending on what it is.
How long was your program?
90. Yeah, 90, yeah.
And then we also have a congregation or endorsing body. So they want, for active duty, they want to have at least 2 years of experience postgraduate work in the church, or somebody's calling you a pastor. So
that was something I didn't realize about chaplains, was that you guys were pastors in churches before.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like people that, you know, donned the name chaplain. I think that's why, because military chaplaincy is a little more specific. So if you meet a chaplain in a hospital, or if you meet a chaplain in a police force, or, you know, in a nonprofit organization, they may not have any of those requirements. But what the United States government has done is they made an agreement with the clergy class in the United States to say, we can't do this on our own to protect the religious freedoms of people. So we're going to get clergy and borrow them from the civilian world, turn them into soldiers, and then they can do the pastoral things that they do in the civilian world with our soldiers to protect their First Amendment right. So that's kind of how we're justified in a very secular government, right, to be able to be pastoral clergy. We belong to our endorsing bodies in a big way. So if we do anything outside of our endorsement, then we could lose our endorsement, which then we would lose our commission. So it really protects us. It protects us from having to do something outside of what our convictions or our call is.
Yeah.
If my church back in Austin's like, you're fired, I hold accountability to them.
Well, obviously, like interfaith marriage and same-sex marriage, those are things that like typically a secular government would be like, you should do this. But you know, if that goes against your convictions, our government respects that, which is really rare if you think about it in terms of, you know, the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's been challenges over the course of the years on that. But over and over again, we have several court cases that have just proven over and over again that you can't force a pastor to do something outside their conviction. And the way it's structured really helps us to be able to do that.
Yeah. So you've been a chaplain how long now, just for clarity?
Yeah, for 7 years.
Okay.
Since 2018.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. What about you?
3 years.
Okay.
He's much younger than Marcus.
Yeah, much younger. So you got MDiv. What's your run time?
Slower now. Yeah, I don't know.
Max bench?
Pretty high.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How old are you?
43.
Oh, yeah. It's too late.
To be a chaplain?
Yeah.
I thought about it. Actually, there's a waiver. That's a whole, I'm probably, with education and experience, I could probably make it happen, but nah. I'm good. I like my job.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Please.
But no, I really almost did it. I came really close. But this isn't about me. This is about you.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. How did you become a chaplain?
So, I grew up in a Christian family. Just start there. And I was about 5 years old when I came to know the Lord. And
we just end there.
That's it. I'm just kidding. Okay.
Let me tell about myself. No, I'm just kidding.
I was raised in the church, was going to a Christian school, very similar to like Rocky Bayou, and I think
Knights,
about
right, Kelly?
Yeah, there you go. I just name dropping sponsored.
She's
sponsored
an alumnus.
By are you?
Alumnus.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
I was about 8 years old and when my uncle had joined the Army. And so he went to Fort Benning in Georgia for basic training. And he was my mom's youngest brother, had a big impact on my life. And so when he went to the Army, I was like, that's super cool. Like, I want to be G.I. Joe, right, as we grew up with. And so I'm like, that's what I want to do. And so I had that in my mind until I, junior high and high school, I got really involved in youth ministry. And I was part of student leadership and was a part of a really healthy youth group. And about my junior year, was encouraged and also felt called toward doing youth ministry. I thought I had a lot of great mentors. I look at our student ministries here at Bayshore and seeing all the adults involved who get to mentor and disciple, you know, our students here. And that was my experience. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. And so, ended up going to, Moody Bible Institute and studied youth ministry there, but had always had like that appreciation for the military. At times, looked back and thought, I wish I would have served. There's a lot of young men from our generation who were when September 11th happened. Mm-hmm. You know, answer the call. And so at the time I felt strongly enough of my conviction in ministry that I wasn't like, I need to go do this. But yeah, I served at a church, in Illinois for 18 years as a youth pastor, Mission Bible Church. You can find them at missionbible.church. And great team there. Still, like, all the pastors that I serve with are still there. We actually handed – when I left to join the chaplain corps, join the Army, I was able to pass on the youth ministry to a kid named Chris Garcia, who was, like, 5 years old when he started attending the church. His dad's the youth pastor, and then he came through our children's and youth ministries and went on – a lot of mission trips with him, and now he's leading and just crushing it. And it's awesome to see. He also ended up going to Moody, and so just really talented, really gifted. It was great to be able to have a smooth transition out of that church, because you don't always see that. You don't always see like people leaving a church well.
Yeah.
And so I think it was a great model for that as I felt called. So my brother's in the Navy, and back in 2019, I was visiting him. He was out in Virginia Beach. And he had some good chaplains that he had worked with, and he asked me, and it's like, hey, do you ever thought about being a chaplain? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, but I think at the time I think God had been preparing my heart for a new chapter, a change in our journey and our story, and it was something to where, as I went through ministry year after year, I've been there for a long time, I didn't want to take it for granted. Hey, this is just where I'm supposed to serve the next year. And so every year I would say, God, if this is where you want me to be, continue to make that clear. If there's another path, I'm open. Mm-hmm. And the thought of it at the time, I was I think I was ready for that transition, that change. And once I had spent, my wife and I spent a significant amount of time in prayer, and you know, with
at least like 3 minutes,
at least 3 minutes, she was like, I think she may have fallen asleep like during that time too, but we talked with, we like sought out counsel, and I think it was an amazing. God just started opening doors like he does, and provided people, and even people within the Army that really encouraged me in that way. And so once I joined, it was evident just that God was in it, and it was a good fit.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, you have one person who's like, this is what I want to do and begin that path, and the other who's the later in life chaplain. You know, it's cool to have that both represented.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you meet a number of those later in life chaplains. It's anywhere from like someone who, you're 29 when you?
Yeah, when I joined, 29.
So 29, like, and then I was 40, right? And so there's a lot that happens in those years. And so you do meet a number of chaplains who, they either maybe had that in their heart when they were like in college or it came on later. And so
that's a nice way of saying for many of them it wasn't working out.
There are some who are
like, I could do this. Yeah, that wasn't your story.
That wasn't my story.
That's good.
It's okay. Yeah. For those of them, no judgment.
It happens.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are a strange core though, because it is very like interfaith, a lot of different religious backgrounds. Like, there's just, you do get some, you get awkward chaplains who have their niche, but there's also awkward soldiers who need love as well. So
awkward church members.
Yeah. There are awkward pastors and awkward church members as well.
So what's it like, just your day to day being a chaplain? What does it look like?
Yeah, so we become soldiers or airmen people, or whatever you whatever your branch that you've gone, you know, you've gone on to.
Sorry.
So we try to do all the things that soldiers do, whether it's like getting up and having formation, going to PT, to all the other little
physical
training.
Right,
yeah. Or, physical therapy for the old guys, a lot of that going on too. Yeah. and then we serve a function in the secular environment, right? And so they see, okay, there's a chaplain. In the Army, it's structured a little differently than the other branches. And so for the Army, we work for a commander at like an 05 level. So that commander is responsible for 500 to about 1,000 people. And we're in his bigger picture of how do I lead this battalion? How do I accomplish the mission that's before me? And how do I take care of people? And so he sees the chaplain as part of that. Mm-hmm. And so we, as chaplains, I think, are responsible with telling him how we fit in that as well. As like, mm-hmm. Hey, these are my skills. These are what I can do. This is how what programs I have. This is what I can do. And we sell that to him and pitch that, and then we get to do that thing. So mm-hmm. it's a lot. If someone can think, a frame of reference of what it is, just really think of like chaplains as missionaries. We're learning the language, we're learning the culture, we're learning the people, we're learning the systems and the rhythms of that organization, and that unreached people group is how many of us would see it. And then say, okay, how do I mold myself into that? How am I in those certain events? What does the unit need that I need to do to be in the spaces that they're at? So whether it's like having a top secret security clearance or being airborne qualified. If I can't get to that space for whatever reason, and it's something I need to qualify for, then I'm going to qualify for it mm-hmm. so I can be in the same spaces mm-hmm. as the soldiers.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard the term hypostatic union.
I have heard
theological
that term.
Yeah. Jesus is 100% man, 100% God. Right. Mm-hmm. So I've always understood that in terms of when you join the Army, you're like, you're 100% pastor. You're 100% officer. Mm. You can't have one without the other. And so it's something that they, good chaplains will mentor. I've been mentored by a lot of good chaplains, and always something that they told us to keep in mind, because you kind of gain the credibility by mm-hmm. being a good staff officer. But of course, you also have to have a pastoral heart and pastoral care and make sure you're taking care of people. But like sort of the staff officer administrative side, like, enables and allows you mm-hmm. to do it, as much as we'll tend to gripe yeah. and complain about. I mean, I was a youth pastor, right? So like admin stuff was not always my forte, but I had to make
That's
it my
surprising.
Forte.
Youth pastors are usually
they're
really
usually
good
super
kind of
put
stuff.
Together and stuff and yeah. not messy at all. But yeah. but even when I was a youth pastor, I had to do it because I'm like, hey, I'm going to bring 100 kids to camp. Like, if this mm-hmm. is jacked up, like, parents aren't going to trust us, and we're not going to be. So you earn that credibility by through things like PT, through things like your own reporting and staff officer work that then allows you to have the trust mm-hmm. to be able to go in and mm-hmm. take care of soldiers.
A phrase that most military people will know is be in the right time, right place, right uniform. And that's just so that they don't get in trouble. But for chaplains, it should be, I'm doing the staff work, meaning I know their calendar and I know what money I can have to request and like all the little administrative pieces, so that me and my team or whatever can be in the right time, the right place, the right uniform, for the right purposes, because it's just one of us for 1,000 people. I'm looking through what are the rhythms that, and what are the places I can be most effective. Mm-hmm. And so you have to know the staff work in order to be in that right spot mm-hmm. or to fit your program or events that we're trying to do in the place that's not going to coincide with other events, yeah. And so, mm-hmm. So staff work is important, just because you'll be twiddling your thumbs doing a lot of effort if you're not really ingrained mm-hmm. into the unit.
So let's talk through, because I don't want to get back to your original question of like, what is it like, what do you do day to day, right? So in the Chapman Corps, they kind of drill down on like our big three things are nurture the living, care for the wounded, honor the fallen. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you think of nurture the living, and you think of like, okay, like this is where we'll use some of our pastoral skill sets and maybe what we did in the church world to help serve the broader military community or Army community specifically. So we were both at the 101st in
Air assault.
Mm-hmm. Air assault. Mm-hmm. In Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And at different times, we served on staff at Crossroads Chapel, mm-hmm. which was a chapel on post where we had a service, Protestant service every mm-hmm. Sunday. Marcus actually, I think, did a lot of the graphic. Did you do a lot of the graphic? Or was that Dan?
Yeah, I also was a youth pastor, so we get to learn.
Do it all.
Youth pastors get to learn all the little traits, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, so when we serve at a chapel community, whatever is, like, lacking, we can mm-hmm. kind of fill in. So whether it's, like, worship, Jason did a lot of worship children's ministry to graphic design and audiovisual stuff, and even rewiring the chapel to make sure there's music when they come into the front foyer, mm-hmm. like all the all the little things that we do as church,
like being on a church staff.
So those are things we do. Care for the wounded, right? Like you have people who are hurting. Mm-hmm. You have people who are, whether it's marriages, because the military can be rough on mm-hmm. on people's mm-hmm. marriages, and so. Sometimes it's marital counseling. Sometimes it's just counseling a soldier who's going through, and sometimes counseling a young soldier who's going through a divorce. I remember speaking with a soldier at one point. His best friend, he found out that she was cheating on him, and she was cheating on him. The best friend, and I remember just praying with him, talking with him. It felt like he was in a rough spot, because not only that is now he was looking at separation, possibly divorce, and then that also meant he was a young soldier, right? So it meant that he wasn't going to be living. Now he's going to be moving back on base, and so those are things that he's struggling through, and we. In our council are able to. I think what's great too is it doesn't matter what background they're from, mm-hmm. and personally, I always try to find a way to bridge that and come to that faith conversation. Like, hey, what is your mm-hmm. faith background? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you from? As opposed to just saying, hey, here's let me pull out my Bible and show you what you need to do. Yeah. It's like find that common ground and then be able to speak into. Hey, here's from my experience and from what the Word of God says. If you're open to hearing it, here are some thoughts on Scripture.
We have a unique position because, like, on our uniform, we wear like a cross on our chest, and there's so many resources and providers for service members. So they've got like all sorts of counseling models, all sorts of mental health providers, all sorts of social workers, and all those kind of things. And I think that. As a young minister coming out of seminary, even any of my counseling classes I took in seminary were like, hey, know what you're good at and then refer. It was like whole class on how to refer people out to mm-hmm. these other resources. But the more I'm around all these other counseling modalities and all these other things, mm-hmm. there's nothing really magic in it. The Army trains us really well on a lot of those other things. And there's nothing super magic in it. So I think really early on in the chaplaincy, I realized, I'm the only one that's going to bring up faith. I'm the only one that's going to bring up the gospel in that room. They can go, I can learn all the modalities, and I will. And if they're helpful, then I'll use them. But I'm definitely not going to neglect bringing up like, hey, where is faith in your life? And what do you think God has to say about this? That's what the good news of the gospel is in this, in this situation, that I'm not going to neglect to do, because they could go to so many offices and so many people, but they voluntarily have come and sat in front of my office, see a cross on my chest, probably up on my mm-hmm. office wall, and we're going to talk a little bit about faith.
That's great.
A great opportunity. Yeah.
That last piece I do want to hit on, I don't know, Marcus, if you have any stories, but that honor the fallen, right? So anytime there's a fallen service member or a service member who's either killed in action, killed in training, we're obviously very heavily involved in that mm-hmm. for our unit, right, of 500 to 1,000 people, right? So we are in charge of helping to coordinate a memorial ceremony that will honor that service member. Have mm-hmm. you?
And I mean, anybody who's been around, like, there's a common phrase we say as pastors, like, oh yeah, marriage, weddings and funerals are great. Mm-hmm. funerals are, you know, you're a little bit closer to the divine, closer mm-hmm. to eternity. There's ministry that happens in those spaces. And yeah, I think early on why I think chaplaincy stayed with me over the years, when I was pastoring and why I kept, it kept coming back in my heart. Like, yeah, like we should go active duty. There was a phrase that a pastor said, a mentor pastor of mine said early on was ministry happens in the margins of vulnerability. And there's different versions of that quote. I tried to look up who said it, but I couldn't find it. But I know
Marcus, that it might have been Tim Keller.
Yeah, it's probably,
Tim Keller.
Who probably, you know, quoted it from Lewis, who probably quoted it from Milton, that, yeah, you know, wherever it goes.
Yeah, Michael Scott. Michael Scott.
But those spaces where we're close to the divine, we're close to eternity, are those spaces where they say, hey, you're going to go we do this thing called notification, where we notify a family member that their service member passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you just don't do that without your chaplain. And so your chaplain goes, that you're ministering to that guy who's about to say, you know, maybe mm-hmm. some of the worst news that that family's ever heard. And you're ministering to that person that's about to say it. You get into the house, and it, dogs could be barking, kids could be running mm-hmm. around, and we're trying to bring like a peace to that space, praying and bringing God's presence into the space as best as we can. And then we get to walk with that family up through the funerals and through the resources that they get, and through all of that. And it's just an incredible opportunity. Yeah. Recently, I did a funeral for a guy in Pensacola who passed away at 87. He used to be a former a Green Beret when he was in like NAM era, and and some of these opportunities where I was just thankful God put me in the position that I'm in. You know, I've got guys that are coming back from a deployment. You know, some stressors that are going on in their life, little stories that I know that are going on with them. And then they get tasked to come fold the flag over this funeral, and I know that the service member we were honoring was a believer, and so I got to just share what the gospel is, what it means to follow mm-hmm. Jesus in your life, and then what it looks like this response that the service member had that you can also have. And so now I have these ears. I'm honoring the family that lost their loved one, doing what they would want me to do. But my heart is also in pastoring the soldiers that are there participating in that funeral as well. So yeah, just a lot of ministry, a lot of like bringing the hope of the gospel into some of these like very like mm-hmm. solemn, dark places.
Yeah, I had to do one notification so far just in my career, and it was probably one of the heaviest mm-hmm. moments of mm-hmm. my life, you know, let alone like just in ministry moments. But it was also like one of the most sacred in that I was you know, thankful that I was able to mm-hmm. be there and handle mm-hmm. that and just try to be the presence of God for this, you know, young mm-hmm. girl who lost her husband. And it was heavy, and it was hard. But at the same time, you know, God's good. Like, I'm sure you've been in those moments mm-hmm. where you're like, God, what do I say? What do I do? Yeah. And you're just walking in with that sense of like, Holy mm-hmm. Spirit, I'm confident in you. I'm not confident in me or anything that I can do. I can be confident in what you will do through me. So,
yeah, absolutely. In those moments, you're like, why me too? You know, you're like, wow, God, you like trust me? Like, this is kind of a big deal. I could really mess this person up. I could really, whether it be marriage counseling, you know. I often feel that way more in those moments when you're like, somebody's sitting there and you clearly like have to say like some kind of piece of advice. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? Why am I the guy? Like, but thank you, Lord. Like, hopefully it's what you would have me say. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. No. So there seems to be a lot of similarities in just serving in a local church to being a chaplain. From your perspective, what are some of the biggest challenges that you guys feel like our service members are facing today, just spiritually, emotionally, with their families? I know that you have to do a lot of counseling.
I don't know that we've clarified that they're ministering to Green Berets, you know, so they're with 7th Special Forces Group, so that's unique in itself. Mm-hmm. But you have both been a part of Big Army.
Yeah.
So maybe you have speak to both. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you have to blur our faces when you
say that
when we're on
Boggy
your
Talk?
Podcast. Yeah. Yeah. And change our voices. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all black.
Okay. No, right. No, we. Yeah, we do. So it's
we're not blurring
we
your faces.
We have
faces, a very similar story. We've both served at the same location. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 101st, kind of like what is considered big army, right? And you show up there, and like when I showed up, I was in a light infantry unit, right? Actually, the 2506. So I don't know if you ever watched Band of Brothers. Or
I'm
heard about it.
With it no.
Yeah, you should watch it.
I respect the fact that it's made, good. But I've never watched it.
Yeah, 10-part miniseries, HBO. Yeah. It's excellent. Tom Hanks made it.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon cameos in it, too.
A
lot of actors, actually. Ross from Friends. I don't know. What's his name?
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ross.
He's the bad guy.
It's Ross. Ross.
Just funny. So anyway, that was my unit,
bad guy,
right? Easy Company and stuff. And it was great. But you go to a unit like that, we had about 700 people. And go in, and it's mostly younger soldiers, right? 18 to 24 year old soldiers, and there's other leaders who are older and more experienced as well, but you know, you got young soldiers who just graduated high school, are now like being given a paycheck, they're given lodging, and they're like, sweet, I'm gonna go buy this Camaro, and like some of it is you're trying to mitigate against them just making terrible decisions, right? And we're not the only one. I mean, they have NCOs and like leadership who are also watching out for them as well, but we are trying to you know, you're ministering, and I remember Chaplain Fisher used to say, he'd be like, Jason, homie, check it out. It's like youth ministry.
Listen, homeboy.
It's like youth ministry, but with guns. Makes perfect
sense. Some settings is the same, you know. Right.
Some
towns, yeah.
Different.
Depending on what city you're in.
Yeah. To y'all's point, like, there's different parts of the Army that have different mission sets. So they have a different population of people a lot of times. So we have our forces command, and that's where we both had experiences there. Mm-hmm. And they're just getting ready to make sure, are we ready? It's great to have that Americans can sleep at night, that there's somebody in the Army or in the military that's thinking of some kind of eventuality that would threaten our nation, and they're training, getting ready for that, right? It can feel monotonous if there's not an actual threat, and you're just getting ready for that threat, right? Mm-hmm. And then, but the idea of readiness is just so on leadership and all those kind of things, so they're just pulled away from their families all the time. There's a lot of stressors that would happen there. So my marriage counseling stress, suicide prevention, like all those kind of things were very heavy in that assignment. The next one was a training and doctrine, or an AETC for the Air Force, where they come in and they go to basic and then they get trained on their job. So it's very like skills and craft training. And they're like, that was very much college ministry. And like so much so where I had like spike ball and ultimate frisbee out in the dorms. And we had Band of Brothers night. Like another drop of Band of Brothers. You need to watch it.
Okay.
Band of Brothers night on Wednesday night.
Kelly tells me to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. You might tear at the end. I always do. I'm just saying. Yeah. I've seen it probably 10 times, and there are always tears.
Yeah,
at the very end.
So TRADOC assignments where you're working at like a basic training, or they're coming in for initial training, can also be very – it's different because sometimes you're the chaplain, but then these guys are kind of like coming through. They're only there for like a short amount of time. You may not be able to build a lot of longevity of relationship, but it can be such a great opportunity, because for some of them, this is like the hardest thing they've ever done in their life.
Yeah.
And so to be there for that, I know I've got friends who are in TRADOC assignments, and they love it just for that, you know, that unique aspect to it.
The ministry also reflects where we're at in our nation. We have a lot of just religious nuns. So, so you know, whether they're like non-religious, it's kind of more of like a rejection of their upbringing if they were raised in a church or something like that. But the large majority of those soldiers coming in are just never had any experience with faith or religion, because their parents and their grandparents now, like where we're at, had never experienced that. So now it's going to be probably the first time they've ever interacted with faith in the military, because we have these chaplains that are there that are religious entities. And then on Sunday, so that you can not clean up your barracks, you can go to services. And so we have, I mean, just incredible testimonies and stories where chaplains are just preaching the gospel to people that and large amounts of soldiers getting baptized, and then moving. One of my goals when I was at the AIT, the Army Initial Training, which is their like trade school, they go to basic. There's so much evangelism that's happening there. And then that next step is I was there for 6 months, or each student would be there for about 6 months. Is now, okay, if you did commit your life to Christ, then now what is it like to be discipled? And so setting up some discipleship, how do you read your Bible, how to live for Jesus and not just be really in a vulnerable position and basic training and tired and mm-hmm. stress, and then like, yeah, I want to give my life to Christ. But now how do you follow that, when you go into the military? So how to be a Christian in college, how to be a Christian mm-hmm. in the service. So mm-hmm. a lot of cool opportunities. But
yeah, and like you said, we now work on the special operations side, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool and unique. And there's chaplains that, whether it's special forces, Rangers, we also have AFSOC
yeah.
is over here as well. Our special operations.
Herbert.
Yeah, Herbert. It's great.
People.
It's their
mostly
people.
Airmen,
mostly
air people.
People. And but it's great. I don't know if you remember the chaplain, Aaron Fabian.
Of course. He preached here one
yeah.
Sunday.
He preached on a Sunday?
Yeah, you guys, that's what you can aspire to here.
Yeah. Remember? At yeah. Bayshore. Yeah, yeah. I remember I met him like on his last Sunday here. And then I was like, I guess I need to just, because I replaced him.
You did?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And so he's over at Ranger Regiment okay. now. And so that's another
Did y'all know Waller, Grant Waller?
Yeah.
There was actually two with guys with the exact same name.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil Waller, Grant Waller, yeah.
Yeah, Grant was here.
And they both
also.
Came here.
Yeah.
Alumni
yeah.
of
Bayshore. Alumni.
Yeah. Bayshore.
Alumnuses? No.
Alumnus.
Oh, yeah.
Alumnus is plural, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. I mean,
anyway, yeah, we
question.
Do work with Green Berets now.
Yeah.
The population's a lot different. And each, you have to, just like any mission field, like kind of know.
Instead of Camaros, they have giant trucks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very true. There are different mindsets across each, like, portions of the military. So maturity levels that are very different. Mm-hmm. Special forces have a different maturity level for sure than some of the other parts of the military. But one of the biggest needs, I think, just for people that are listening to our church, from y'all's church, of like, how do I interact with a military person? Mm-hmm. I meet a military person. We go back and forth of like, what does it look like for a chapel community in an installation, and is it valid or is it a really church, or should they go off base to go to these other churches? I struggled with that when I first got to the 101st Airborne and helping run Crossroads Church. Was there's some great churches in town that were doing some really cool things, but we had a pretty large congregation, so we were working toward that congregation a lot, and I still didn't click until my next assignment where I wasn't needing to run a chapel. So I went to a local church, and it was a great church, and they were great people, but as soon as I would tell them I'm military, like, people in my life stage, we have little kids. People in my life stage, like, we have only so much capacity to invest in relationships and people mm-hmm. sometimes. And so they know that I'm military, and they immediately are like, oh, okay, cool. You're only going to be here for like a year. I just don't have the capacity. And they wouldn't say this, of course. They're all nice mm-hmm. church people. Mm-hmm. But I could see it in their eyes. Like, I have only so much capacity to invest mm-hmm. in you because you're gonna leave. And so I saw then the benefit of a military community chapel and why people were coming to that chapel mm-hmm. as opposed to going to the community ones. Mm-hmm. So I think Church at Bayshore does a really good job though at making military people feel connected. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, like, if you're thinking of like, how do you help or how do you like minister to military people? I'm just like, simple friendship and knowing that there's going to be a kingdom relationship that I might only have for a year to 2 years, mm-hmm. and let me invest in that neighbor or that person that walked into our small group or whatever, and say, all right, this relationship may only be 6 months to 2 years to 3 years, but I'm going to be your friend is I think one of the biggest needs in our community, just families that our church will interact with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've done such a great job that you became a member.
I'm
well, yeah.
And if you want to become a member, Discover Bayshore is coming up
December 7th.
At 12 p.m.
I think
immediately after
12:15. Yeah,
I'm sorry, 12:15.
That's okay.
That's okay.
You can go over there at 12 if you're
trying
want.
To take yeah. Kelly's yeah. job here. That's
I think
what
he
I
is.
Think.
Yeah. No, it is good. I think that some military families, or they do go to a military church on base because it because it is such a transitory community, mm-hmm. and they're like, hey, I can just kind of pop in, yeah. people get me, and then pop out. And I think that those who can kind of come to an assignment and plug in and be loved on by the church and then be sent out again when it's mm-hmm. their time to go, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
So this is a unique community because a lot of Green Berets end up staying for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. That's the different part of the thing about special operations community. I don't know how it is with the air people
yeah.
at Eglin, whether they're just a lot of them are here for a while. Yeah. And so
not to the same degree. They move in, cycle out a lot yeah. more. But mm-hmm. yeah. 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 But yeah, Green Berets, I mean, some of them have been here for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. yeah.
Know,
yeah
since Seventh Group moved here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and you made a point, sorry, you know, you were talking about readiness. What people probably don't realize is those special operators, they're and I don't know what you can say, but they're always engaged. I mean, they're still, when we don't go to war for 5-7 years, they're still deploying every 6 months mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. a year, you know.
Yeah.
So you're ministering to people who are in combat, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. and have a high level of training for yeah. them in combat. Yeah.
They do.
The bigger picture of what so like military people deal with, you know, I equate it a lot to like protecting my home. I'm going to protect my home. If there's any invader or somebody that's going to come in and try to hurt my family, then I'm ready to deploy whatever means necessary, right, to protect my family. And so if it means taking the life of the person that invades my home, then I'm going to get ready for that. But I know that if I have to do that, I'm going to have to process that. I'm going to have to be like, why did this person think that they could come into my home? Where were they at? What was their upbringing? I know I'm fully justified to do what I need to take care of my family.
Especially in Florida.
I grew up in Texas, and so, you know, we have the means to do those things. And but I wouldn't put that on my son to do that, right? I wouldn't let him. I know that there's going to be a burden incurred with me having to take someone's life, and I'm not going to put that on my yeah. son. So what we're asking service members to do is to be ready to take life, if necessary, give mm-hmm. up their own, all while maintaining their soul or their mm-hmm. self. And most of them have said, yeah, I'll take on the burden of that, and whatever consequences happen, when's that, you know, if those kind of things happen, so that my neighbors don't have to take on that mm-hmm. same burden, so mm-hmm. that my family, so that my nation doesn't have to take on that same burden. So we use words like moral injury or PTSD mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. some of those things to try to figure out, to put names to some of the burden that people kind of take mm-hmm. on. And so what does it look like for chaplains to nurture the living in that? And how do we honor our people that have fallen in that? It's all big, that bigger picture that we want soldiers to be able to come back and be the dads that they mm-hmm. want to be, come back and be mm-hmm. the community members, the whatever career they want to do after the military. Like, we want them to be whole people. And I think me and Jason both would believe that, like, having faith in who Jesus Christ is in their life mm-hmm. and the redemptive work of seeing, you know, sin and destruction in this world and what salvation he's brought for them, you know, is going to be the biggest piece of that as they walk into this new place.
Well, this has been a really meaningful conversation. Thanks for sharing about yourselves and just what we can also do to support and encourage military members. Well, thanks for your support. Thanks yeah. for listening to us. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.